Being a nomad is cool, but like working on the kitchen table is sometimes a little bit like you don't feel like you're working, you know?
Yeah, no, I know. I have a co-working space like as my office, and I really like having my own desk with a second monitor and everything in place. I couldn't do the nomad thing for more than a month or so.
Yeah, I can understand that. So, how are you doing? It's good to finally talk with you.
Yeah, doing really well right now. Where are you actually? You're still in France, right?
Yep, I'm in Paris right now.
Ah, nice. Yeah, I'm in Denmark.
Pretty nice. So how do you want to do this?
Yeah, I was about to say. So the plan is, as you see, I already started recording. I always do it because, you know, you can cut later and it's always better to start recording early and then later. And the short version is that I like this to be a casual conversation. I mean, I have a few obviously questions for you, but there's no like a big intro or anything. I like to like just ease in. And then we go from there, and anything that's not good will be cut out. And obviously, if anything, if you regret thing, and if we can cut it out later. That's very low key and easy. So does that sound good?
It sounds very good. It's funny because you have always this different style, and like the fact that it's recording straight from the beginning is something that like no one else is doing when they record podcasts. And I really like it. Like it feels way more natural to
Yeah.
not have this like moment where you're like, okay, now we record.
When I'm a guest on a podcast, I always find it kind of awkward, you know, like, okay, now we start. Like, and I like when it's like just a casual conversation and then it gets interesting. Okay, then we actually start the publishing part. But I've regretted a few times not hitting the record button earlier. So now I'm just always doing it right from the start. So maybe where we can start, I think what would be fun, and I actually don't know the answer is, but you've done a few startups before the whole stuff that really took off, right?
Yeah, at least like I had two big things that didn't really work out. And I think during those two experiences, I did all the mistakes that you can possibly, I think.
So yeah, I actually had no idea. I always had assumed you were like some heckle, like the rest of us, just doing these tiny projects. But you were quite serious, like in the startup scene and stuff, right? In France.
Yeah, but I don't know if you live the same, but so I did this engineering school. And there you hear a lot of stories about successful entrepreneurs and how they raised so much money and how they hired a huge team and they grew fast. And so it was like a dream to like follow the steps and to like live the Silicon Valley experience, like hire big teams, grow fast, raise million, and that's exactly what we tried to do. And so like we caring only about users, thinking that it's okay to raise and raise more money. And like the truth is, it's definitely not something that I recommend to anyone right now.
It's funny how life plays out sometimes. I mean, obviously also for me, right? I ended up a very different place now than where I started and had absolutely no idea this is what I would be doing when I started. But I mean, super interesting. Like, what were the startups? What were the ideas? Like, is it now in hindsight obvious that these were bad ideas, or do you still think they could have worked out if you had approached them differently?
I think they could have worked with a better execution, but it's not something you really think about. Like you really think about the idea when you are like that young and you start. The idea was like to motivate your kids to do their daily chores. And that was kind of an opportunistic idea. Like I was not a parent at the time. I was just talking a lot with parents, and they all had this thoughts about this is my daily problem. I'm struggling a lot to make my kids clean up their rooms or do their homework, and like the app was not good. The like how we develop thing, how we try to it's like since you want to do the next Facebook, you build a very complex ecosystem with the interaction between multiple apps, and you think it's going to work, but it's like it's way more complicated than what it should be.
Yeah, I hope you're not offended when I'm saying this, but I think this is like a good example of what you can call a sitcom startup idea, right? When like the gang is sitting in a bar and one of the characters has a startup idea and the writers have to come up with a startup idea. That sounds kind of cool, but it's not really a good idea if you think about it a bit more.
That's basically how it happens. Basically, like the idea came up like this. And then you think about it and you say like, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do it. And you know, it's like we never had any validation that people were willing to pay for that. And we still did it.
Yeah, that's funny. So, but did anything good come out of this? I mean, did you meet your business partner there?
Yes, exactly. That's the best thing that happened. We actually did this like a master degree in entrepreneurship together. And that was the first startup that we created together right after school. And so after that, we worked on that idea during 2 years. We needed these 2 years to realize that it was not a good idea. I think it could have been like 2 months. But then we split up, we did many different things, and we came back together about 2 to 3 years ago. And this time we did really good with TweetHunter and Taplio.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's so funny how these things play out, and at least something. Yep. But did you raise money back then, or was it all also bootstrapped?
Yeah, we did raise money, not crazy money under the million, but yeah, enough to hire like 8 interns and to feel like a big manager with this.
Not gonna lie, that sounds kind of fun, right? At least to play the startup game for a bit.
It was fun. Like, we had very fun moments. It was a nice team. We had like a very basically like the sitcom moments. We raise money, we party, etc.
No regrets there.
No regrets.
Nice. So, and how did then obviously TweetHunter come about? Was it your idea or was it another bar idea?
It was during a phase where, like, with Thomas, because we were kind of traumatized with this like 2 years failure. We started doing this experiment where we shipped one new product every week for like 3 to 4 months. And so we both had a lot of ideas and we were not waiting for the other one to validate it to like start working. And TweetHunter was like one idea that I got during an evening, and I started right away to actually build it. And it like in a few hours, I had a prototype. I showed him to Thomas, and right away he was really into it, because he was really not into tweeting at the time, but that was the tool that was actually giving him some inspiration about what to tweet.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely hit a nerve there, but I mean, I'm curious, what were the other ideas you explored, and did any of these ideas go anywhere? You must have tested a ton, right? I did it with one idea a month, but one idea a week sounds intense. So
there was like a lot of repackaging, like one idea be like transforming another idea that is not that far and reusing the same code. So that way we were able to build very fast new things. So one of them was like this way to find leads, geolocalized leads. So you are like selling to restaurants and you want to get all the restaurants in Paris or all the restaurants in Dubai. And so we had this like a map view where you were selecting the zone, and we were extracting and trying to find the emails of the restaurant owners in many, many databases. We did like 2 or 3 contracts for a few thousand euros, but it was much way more manual work than what we wanted to be.
I mean, that sounds like a good idea to me. I mean, I know there are a few companies that are making decent money just offering this, right?
Yeah, but it's super hard to scale. Like, you need to sell in person, I guess.
Yeah.
To it. There was this nice thing, like the community search engine. So the idea that you want to launch a product and you want to know about communities that are into these kind of products. And that's how we built the search engine for that. And that was such a bad idea when I think about it. It's such a bad idea because it's the kind of product that you would only use once, only when you launch. users will not be successful using it because you cannot just land on a community, drop your product, and move on. It's definitely not how it works. But that was the kind of thing that we would be promoting. So no, it cannot work.
Yeah, no surprise there. I mean,
yeah.
It's always funny how these ideas seem great in the moment and you're just building, building, building. And after a while, like, what did I do? Yeah. That makes no fucking sense, right?
So, but like community search engine sounds very well. Sounds very nice.
Sounds great, yes.
Yeah.
No, that makes no, like the monetary potential is very low. I think one guy, the guy who runs Gummy Search, right, the Reddit is running yeah. something like this called Hive. Yeah. I forgot, like something community, but like the, I think the revenue is a rounding error, probably, right?
It's yeah, like, I think he ran into the same problem that we had. Did yeah. you have like ideas that sounds awesome and he are not that awesome?
Yeah, I mean, another big bucket of these. I'm sure you've built product like this. It's just products that cater to the indie hacker community, right? I think that's one example of that. And I mean, that's probably the worst market you can service in general. But yeah, Tweet Hunter, I mean, the value proposition was quite at least somewhat a different one, I think, in the beginning, right? How did you start? What was the idea? Was it really just about tweet inspiration, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like it's so the main idea is to build a wall of tweets that would be super relevant to you, to inspire you. And so we had two key components to do that. First of all, is like we index and we categorize all tweets that go into our database. So we know what they are talking about, what are the main topics. And we do the same for your Twitter accounts. It was at the time where GPT-3 was just coming out and many, many people were using GPT-3 to generate content. But at the time, it was not that great compared to what we have right now. And we found that it was much better to use GPT-3 to categorize and to cluster information. And so when you got into Tweet Hunter, Twitter accounts, and we find relevant tweets that talk about the same topics in kind of the same way as you do, and we just build this wall of tweets, and you just look at them, and by just building connection, merging ideas, it makes idea come to your brain directly.
Yeah, just an inspiration tool, like that's yep. the idea. But now, obviously, I think it evolved, and now it's in a different category almost, I would say, right? It's now a scheduling tool primarily, right? And
it's
the inspiration
insane.
Is still there, but it's no longer like the front and center piece, I think.
Definitely. And I remember that at the very beginning, I was so afraid about going in the scheduler area because it's like it seemed too hard to build. Like it's something where you are not allowed to mess up, because like if you mess up with scheduling, people can be very pissed. And yeah, when I look at the tool right now, it's so crazy how it's definitely not the same anymore.
And I mean, you're obviously one of the few tools I think that survived, right, with all the API chaos and a ton of competitors shut down. And I think also you couldn't build the tool you started with. Right? I mean, the API limits and everything is far too strict unless you spend a ridiculous amount of money, which no one is, just to like the small indie project you did at the beginning. So you got lucky in a sense, right? And have now some real mode, I think.
Yes, that the timing was super tight, because like we built Twitter at the time where you started to have some individual creators. And those people were really not interested in tools like Buffer or like Hootsuite, which they are definitely meant for like enterprises that want to be everywhere. And right now, you cannot build anything on Twitter. So yeah, we had this like a 1 to 2 years period, and we were right at the middle.
Yeah, timing is so important, right?
Yeah. But like, what about also you? Because I know you build tools and you build a tool on for Twitter that we're super happy to acquire. Like you would not ever build something for Twitter?
Me?
Yeah.
No, probably not. I mean, with all the API chaos and stuff, I mean, what I built was the simplest thing you can build. It obviously served the same need, at least as your version one, right? It was like what to tweet, like the tweet inspiration and something I built for myself. And it didn't require access to the API or anything I did. It was just, it is just an Airtable, right? Connected to the simplest front end you can imagine. But I mean, there's so much platform risk and everything involved with Twitter, so much chaos. And also, honestly, Twitter has become less enjoyable for me as a user. So the data might say one thing, but my gut feeling is a different one, right? And I don't know if it's really still a fast growing or whatever train I would jump on right now. Definitely not my gut feeling. It doesn't feel like something I would invest. Like, you're still very active on Twitter, right?
Yeah, I try to. Like, it's, but in my case, it's also something like I feel I have to. Because of my business, it feels like I'm a bit locked. And
it's like when you have a fitness company, you can't get fat, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, we used to run ads, and at the time where my account was not that big, and you got all that like hate or replies from people like, yeah, if your tool is really good, how is your account not with a million followers? And you can't help, you would have this.
But now you have 100K, I think, followers, right? And what are your engagement stats looking like right now? Like, are you happy?
It's crazy because like with the recent changes, so engagement is directly not correlated with your number of followers, like not anymore. So it's not that high compared to what it used to be before. It depends on if you compare it to number of followers or number of impression. But yeah, the recent changes from Twitter were quite hard to adapt for creators.
Yeah, and I don't like it. No, I mean, I just had a quick look at your timeline and you have 100,000 followers, and I see your latest tweets like posted hours ago have like 10 likes or something, right? Which is absolutely crazy. And the reason is the algorithm changes and the way it works. You posted this to thread with the analysis, right? Looking at the algo and stuff, so you know this better than I do. But my very surface level analysis is that it works like TikTok, right? It, regardless of how many followers you have, they show your tweet to like this small pool of initial viewers, and based on the engagement there, like 200 people or so, and based or 1,000 people, and if no one clicks like or only 5 people click like within this pool, no one ever sees the tweet again, right? So is that correct? I mean, I can't remember the details from your thread.
that's super true. And it's like the pool size, the sample size at the very beginning is smaller than ever. Like, it has never been smaller for Twitter. So like they are stopping to show your tweets very, very early if it's not performing. Whereas if it's performing quite well, it will go much more viral than it used to go before. And I think they're just trying to optimize for appealingness. Like, they are just trying to make the platform to compete in the content itself with TikTok and the others to like to make it more much more enjoyable for the viewers. So you
for the mainstream, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They want to be mainstream.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think they are losing a ton of their core community, and I'm not entirely convinced that it will work out because the mainstream prefers video, probably. I mean, TikTok, in terms of if you're just looking for these cheap dopamine hits, I very much doubt that Twitter will ever be up there. TikTok is just more optimized, but will be interesting. I mean, what was your takeaway in terms of like what is now the winning strategy? Because, you know, Twitter goes through these phases. You have like the reply guy phase, then you have the threat thread boy phase. And what is working now? I don't see a lot of threads right now, but also they introduced the long form tweets, but they don't seem to be prioritized or anything like that. So I have absolutely no clue what is working right now.
It's very hard to say. It's definitely clear that they try to push media tweets more, like tweets with images or videos. But it really seems like you need to have a high CTR towards engagements. So you need to have a high ratio of engagements to impression. If you have these, your content is probably going to be boosted. So it's the problem with that is that it's going to enhance more like clickbait contents, which is definitely not something that is enjoyable in the long term. So I'm quite curious about how it's going to go.
Yeah, I think I've seen people talk about like engagement bait is at an all-time high, right? Anything you can do to trigger people is working. Is working, and also just asking questions and stuff like that. But yeah, that is not the content I enjoy, to be honest.
So where are you hanging out on the internet right now? Like,
I currently don't hang out anywhere. So it's kind of funny because I'm becoming a bit more mindful about like my, and like the whole cheap pleasure thing. I'm trying to avoid like the whole social media and stuff as much as I can, at least for a bit, just because I think, you know, there's that you definitely get sucked in and it just becomes more and more. And before you really know it, you get like this compulsive feeling to check it every few minutes, and it becomes very hard to focus on stuff and do other things like reading a book or something, because it does not have the same rate of hits like browsing on Twitter and stuff. And I didn't like that. So I've taken a few steps back and currently probably spent less than, I don't know, 5 minutes on average on Twitter. And also no other social media platform is for me. I never did Instagram or Facebook. I mean, no, that's not true. It's kind of funny, here in Denmark, you have to use Facebook because all the local communities and stuff is actually happening on Facebook, but it's all like in private groups and all around events and stuff like that. So I don't really count that in the same way, but no, I haven't found a replacement for what Twitter has been, I'd say 2 or 3 years ago for me, right? Which felt like a cool community where I actually could keep up with like what are people doing and get cool ideas. It feels kind of gone. So I don't get the same enjoyment, and I don't know any replacement right now. What about you? You've been more focused on LinkedIn, right?
Yeah, definitely. LinkedIn, but like I think it's for definitely different reasons than what you just shared. In my case, it's just that I'm a bit scared. Like I really value the audience for starting a business, and I think it's a very powerful tool. And all the changes that's happening on Twitter, it's a bit scary when you have grown an audience like me, because you feel like you can lose your account and lose the reach in just a second. So I've been a bit more active on LinkedIn. And since last week, I have started this newsletter in like quite a weird one. This I created dynamic newsletter that is different for like everyone. It's quite a fun project.
That sounds fun. Yeah, I've actually played around with stuff like this just for myself to basically scrape a lot of sites and then curate, like train it to on the content I like, and then get a personalized digest. But I was never able to make it work well enough. So I gotta check out your new project. What's the name?
It's Daily Nuggets, daily.c.ai. And yeah, it's built to do it at scale. Because like when you have GPT-3 running for like thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, it can be quite costly. So I would be super interested in what you think about it, if you feel like it's relevant.
I will definitely give it a try and then send you a message what I think. So, I mean, one last question for Tweet Hunter, which I would be very curious about, is like, there were so many of these scheduling tools, right? Everyone and their grandmother was building one at a time, at least it felt like that. It was a very low-hanging fruit, like serving the indie hacker community or whatever your community we were in. Why do you think Tweet Hunter was able to be one of the few that actually survived, right? I think there were only 5 or 10, I don't know the exact number, that got big enough so they could afford this API bill increase, whatever, right? Why do you think you were able to win?
it's a very, like, I think we got into, so right now I think we are in the first position on Twitter in terms of revenue, not in terms of users, but I think we have the more premium products and the more expensive with competitors. So we got these first spots quite early in the race in the last 2 years. And I think that's because we got into AI super fast and we built the most AI advanced features. And probably because we took those features and for almost each of them, we built a very small and free mini tool that works in like as a mini tool and that is ranking super well SEO strategy with those mini tools. And I think we have like more than 10 for Twitter. And at the same time, we got very present and very consistent on Twitter in the last 2 years, being there every day and to showcase the brand Twitter. And actually a lot of our competitors got just tired after a few months. They just stopped tweeting. And if you look at their profile on Twitter, you will see that sometimes they have like 3 to 6 month break with no contents. And I definitely understand that it's something that I went through, like in a lot of moments, you just want to give up and stop being there. But I, like, with this industry, it's a bit sad, I know, but I think like you cannot afford that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Did you ever hire a ghostwriter?
Yeah, I have one, like for like more my big contents, like the threads. I'm working with the ghostwriters. I try to tell them about what I want to talk about and I review and I guide them. I never ever gave them the key of my accounts because maybe I'm a bit too much of a control freak, but I really want to keep the full ownership of my account. I want to reply myself to people. I want to be the one who posts contents because like it's like I'm so afraid of one mistake that could like go sideways. I don't know why.
No, I think that's perfectly valid, but at the same time, I think a lot of people are doing it, right? They have an assistant and they have the keys and they manage everything for them. I think that's very common, or a lot more common than people think. Definitely. So, and then you sold it, right? Why? How come?
So we were not fully aligned with my co-founder. I think I would have continued a bit more, but it's true that the pressure was insane. Like when we did sell, Elon Musk was around, starting to mess up with Twitter. And at the same time, Tapio, our tool for LinkedIn, was not fully compliant and we were super afraid to be banned from LinkedIn. So both those together, we were having a huge growth, but we had this feeling that at any point, everything could be over. Like both tools could be just down.
Go to zero, yeah.
Yeah, so we started talking with a few companies. We hired a broker to like actively trying to sell the tools, and all the conversation that we had was like meaningless. Like people were like not willing to take the risk, or they were discounting our products so hard, or it was us that like didn't want to work with them because of the culture difference. We have like I have a few examples where it was super tough, the conversations, and there was this one guy like Guillaume from Lemley. We actually went to school together, like middle school. We were like 13 or 12.
That's such a crazy coincidence, right?
Yes, it's insane. And we totally lost track of each other. during like 15 years. And when we, like, I started talking again with him before Twitter, we had lunch, I think, three times. And when we started talking about getting acquired, he told me that he could be interested. And yeah, that was a match. Like, we are from the same country, same age. We're talking the same startup language. He has created and grew his company on the fundamentals that we are promoting with Taplio and Twitter, like the personal brand, talking on social media, sharing value for free. He did all that. So he was a customer, he understood the value, and we managed to build a deal that was secure enough for him. But given the high growth of the products, if the growth was keeping on, we would have a high rewards, high multiple on the tools. Does that make sense, Ian?
Yeah, no, I know that. I think I've seen you or your business partner talk about the details, right? And you have a very kind of complicated structure, right? It's not cash business. It's like, no, you get this, and then after this milestone, and after this milestone, and then eventually, and all these different clauses. But if you put it that way, I think it makes perfect sense. So you wanted to take some chips off the table. At the same time, there's all the risk around what is happening with Twitter and LinkedIn compliance and that stuff. So both sides needed to be happy, and it makes sense. But you're still involved, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's been a year, and I have one more year to go. There are like six revenue milestones to achieve. We have reached four already. And so we have like 1 year to go to reach the two remaining ones.
Cool. So, and what happens afterward? Like, is it set in stone already that you're leaving and doing something else? And this is why you are already started playing with new projects, or?
Oh, definitely not. It's like Lempire and Lemnis, it's a very cool team. They are very young people, very motivated. They are very talented people. And so I have no idea what's going to happen in a year. Like, maybe I will be tired about it. Maybe not. I don't know. It's very hard to say.
Yeah, maybe you build the same thing again for the next Twitter, whatever that might be. I'm so behind. I know I have absolutely no clue what the next social media.
A few of the like the new Twitters, like Threads.
No. I saw people talking about it, but I'm always like, I'm going to wait until the dust settles and then.
Okay, it's like there are so many right now that it's very hard to keep up.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the main issue, right? It's so fragmented that they never hit the critical threshold where the actual content is good enough. And that is kind of frustrating, because on the one hand, I wish there was a winner that basically brought back Twitter from a few years ago, really just show my followers my content and show me the content of the people I'm following, right? Very simple. I really wish this could be brought back, but no, there is no clear winner, so I'm just going to wait.
Yep.
So we are running out of time. I have this nice hard limit called Zoom 40 minutes free. No, I think it's perfect. So it really helps to avoid going over time. But I thought this was super fun and really, really interesting. Thanks a lot for taking the time. And I will definitely check out your new project, give you feedback, what I think about it.
Thank you very much, Jacob. Really appreciate it.
Talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.